From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in a word, refugee. It's a word many of us don't think about often, but in the Rochester area, the refugee community is larger than you might think. In fact, I think you're going to hear some numbers and stories this hour that really surprise you. Many refugees are women and children, and in some communities, some refugee communities, that's the bulk of the refugees, not all the time. Many come here not knowing the language. Some refugees have never seen snow, let alone experienced brutal upstate winters. Local documentary photojournalist Arlene Hodge-Thaler has worked with local students trying to tell the stories of the refugee community here through photography. And a new series at the Community Darkroom Galleries opens on Saturday. We're going to be talking about that and exploring what the refugee community is like here. Frankly, Arlene, I come into this conversation from a position of ignorance, and I'm thrilled to have you and this panel because, well, let me just start by, before I even introduce the rest of this panel, how, as a photojournalist, did this idea come to you?
Well, I had been working a lot with the homeless community in Rochester, mm-hmm. and through the approach of immersion. For a long time, my photography was very gratuitous, photographs of refugees or homeless people, and I didn't know their names, I didn't know their stories, so I started immersing myself into their lives by sleeping with homeless people, and I lived in the Maplewood Park neighborhood for a few years, and most of my neighbors were refugees, so on Sunday mornings, it was a very colorful neighborhood, and I'd scratch my head wondering, you know, how do I get to know these people, and that, so the darkroom had come to me about teaching a class, again, on social reportage and stepping away from the homeless, I decided, well, the refugees. I'm really curious, and I know a little bit about it from living in the neighborhood, but how could I immerse myself further? And that's what we did.
And that's how the project was born.
Yeah.
What an amazing story. Now, there's a couple of students here. Can you introduce your students that you have here?
Yeah. Student and good friend, Michelle Ashley, who is also a photographer, has her own photography business, and Lucas Marchal from France. He's our guest student as well.
We say students of our
classroom, our Rochester Refugees social reportage classroom at the Dark Room.
Well, welcome, Michelle. Welcome, Lucas. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Prajit Rana Magar, who is the chief executive officer of the Bhutanese community of Greater Rochester. And Prajit and I were talking before the hour even began, and I asked you a question that the offered for me a remarkable answer. I said, how big is the refugee community here? Do we have a number? And you said just the Bhutanese community alone in Monroe County is how much?
So it'd be between 5,000 and 7,000.
5,000 and 7,000 here?
Yes.
Do you think most...
And a lot of people are moving in here.
So that number, again, that number is growing.
Yes.
Do you think most people realize the refugee community is that large?
Well, yes.
You certainly do. Arlene, I did not. I would never have guessed. Would you?
I would not have guessed. Well, I guess that's not true. Living in the neighborhood, I was surrounded by Bhutanese, Burmese, and Nepali refugees, mm-hmm. and I knew there was a large influx, but I think for me it was hundreds, maybe 800 or 1,000.
Right.
That's a shock to me.
To hear that number in the thousands. When you decided that you wanted to live among the homeless to kind of get a sense for that life, Arlene, did you enter that experience with any idea about the refugee population at the time?
No, not at all. I had had a personal experience with people that I knew that were substance abusers and homeless, and you know, part of it was getting to know that population so I could better understand what the people in my life were going through. And the refugees were not a part of my world other than being my neighbors at the time. So I had no clue, you know, as many of us do, we're caught up in our own worlds. We don't really look at our neighbors a lot and see what's really going on.
Amazing stuff. Well, first of all, for our listeners, this hour is just kind of an outline. We're going to talk in a moment about this, the Darkroom Galleries that launches on Saturday, and tell you how you can see that and understand how to kind of get in touch with that. But also we wanted to have a conversation about what it means to be a refugee, what's going on in Rochester, families trying to build and rebuild and look for work and build strong lives for each other. And you can call the program if you have questions or comments. The number is toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, again, Prajit Rana Magar is the chief executive officer of the Bhutanese community of Greater Rochester. With 5,000 to 7,000 people in Monroe County, in our area, just in the Bhutanese community alone, what's the number one challenge they face when they come here, Prajit?
Well, culture.
Language?
Language is the most, that's the big hindrance in our community to progress. Apart from that, adaptation is another issue.
Adaptation, yeah.
Yes, and I've been telling that the speed of development here is so fast that our people cannot really catch up with that. They have grown up in a different speed of development.
When you say speed of development, are you talking about a pace
advanced.
Of life, a pace of work?
Pace of life, okay. Advancement, technologies, these things are not used to with the community that I grew up with and the people that have come here. So basically that's the challenge, and the type of work they get. They work very hard, but the type of work that they are never used to. And so there are problems with management, and getting along with the neighborhood, and not being able to understand what's going on next door, because we lived in a community where a food 3 houses apart from yours would be something that you can go and eat and like enjoy together. It's the entire community would be like a home, but here it's kind of people are indifferent.
So in other words, your neighbors in the United States, you might not even know them, whereas where you grew up, you could walk into someone's house three or four doors down. Or a community where it's essentially a community dwelling, right? Where you
yes.
can walk in and that's it. Their food is your food?
Yes. All of a sudden here you are confined in a house, mm-hmm. and it's more like monotonous for our people sometimes.
Does it feel solitary? Does it feel closed off?
Absolutely solitary. I mean, yes, it's advanced and technology has progressed into its best, yet we feel like totally isolated.
How interesting. So, Prajit, for the 5,000 to 7,000 Bhutanese community, the refugee community here, what is the main factor that brings them here in the first place, that pushes them here?
You mean from Nepal to
yeah.
here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, actually, in terms of our story, we lived in a refugee camp in Nepal, so it was the intention of international nonprofit organization called International Organization for Immigration.
The International Organization for Immigration.
Migration, actually.
Or for migration. I should say migration.
Yes, IOM. Mm-hmm. And the United States government. So they initiated in bringing us for the third country resettlement. So resettlement. And so we were interested in that. So we lived in the refugee camp for 22 years without any result of a chance of going back to our homeland. So that's basically how we ended up here.
So there are refugee camps there, and then there's an international effort for migration to
yes.
to essentially to place people, to help them.
Yes.
And for those of our audience, the host included, who don't know about life in Nepal, again, give me a sense for the landscape of Nepal. Why the situation is even happening in the first place?
Well, it's we got to go back to long, long history, and we might not have enough time to talk about
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, basically, it's Bhutan. It's a small country in between India and China. So the people of Nepalese origin who migrated to Bhutan in 18th century, as far as the books are concerned, settled in the southern part of the country, and they developed themselves, they progressed, they were good at farming. Slowly, the land was fertile. So their standard of living increased. And towards like 1980s, 70s, they started to realize that they needed some kind of representation in the government, since they have been paying taxes and they are the citizens. So basically, there was some kind of volatile situation in terms of political conflict. And then we had to leave the country because we had no choice, because the genuine Bhutanese government would not allow us, would not accept us as the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to produce a different kind of documents to prove that we were the genuine Bhutanese. But they would divide the family into like 4, 5, 6, 7 categories, and my dad would be 1 and my mom would be 7, and 7 had to leave the country and 1 would be eligible to stay in the country, so no one would want to split the family. So
well, yeah, why would a mother be one group and a father another group.
So
was that purposely done to split families? I don't understand.
Well, it is some kind of purposely done thing because they had to show the proof of 1958, the land tax of 1958, so which a lot of family didn't really have it, although their parents paid it. And they were like, if my mom was married to Indian Indian husband and the husband lived here, so Indian husband would not be Burmese. And if someone's dad married Indian women, she would not be genuine Bhutanese. So it was a trick of the government, I'd like to say, that they wanted to split the family, and they knew that, after all, they would not like to split, and they would leave the country.
Okay, a lot of very sad politics has torn families apart. It's created a refugee crisis, et cetera. And go ahead, Prajit.
And a lot of human rights violations. We wanted our Nepali literature to be introduced in the schools and colleges. They would not allow that. And since we were the most producing population of the nation, and we were the most deprived, so we just asked for our human rights, and we were not allowed that.
So denial of human rights.
Yes.
Again, so you've got this refugee crisis. There's a Bhutanese refugee population, I'm assuming, in many parts beyond Rochester. But here we are here. Prajit, you came here when?
I came in October 2010.
Okay, so October 2010. It's been here 4 years now.
Yes.
Did you come in different circumstances than others? And by that I mean, did you speak English? What was your situation when you arrived?
Well, fortunately, the refugee camps in Nepal, especially the Bhutanese refugees, had the schools with English background a little bit. So I went to English school. But the teachers were not English, and I mean, we were taught in English, but it was not that standard English. That's what I mean. So yeah, I came with little English, and I developed my English, and I talked to the American people, and so that's how I'm able to talk to you right now.
Oh, and you're doing a great job of it. But many people who arrive as refugees don't have that skill. I can't imagine trying to get a job, for example, if you have a language issue, if you've got cultural barriers, et cetera. So is there a general sense for the joblessness? How much unemployment is there in the refugee community?
Yes. There is a bunch of people without employment, but there are some organizations like Catholic Family Center, and there are other organizations helping with finding jobs, and there are people who are already in the company and try to bring a friend. So basically, they get the job where they should not speak a lot of English.
Where they don't have to speak very much?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, let's say, working in front of a machine, let's say. But people have been improving a lot. That's a positive point of that. People without it. My dad had no English at all, and he does not need an interpreter now.
And where is your dad?
He's here in Rochester.
Here in Rochester.
Yes.
And he still doesn't speak English?
He does.
He does speak English?
Yes.
Okay, but he's doing fine. He's doing okay?
Yes, he's working, so he's kind of happy.
That's great to hear. But let me go back to Arlene Hodge-Thaler, the photojournalist who helped spark this look and this project. When you were living in the homeless community and meeting people and you're starting to understand the refugee situation, people who are homeless, who are refugees, they're trying to build a better life here and not end up on the streets or without a place to live. And there must be tremendous barriers that Prajit is describing. What did you see?
In regards to the refugees
and
that? Well, definitely language is a barrier. What's interesting is I think of that Rosetta Stone commercial where if we all learn one language, it makes the world smaller. Well, I don't even think it goes as far as that. When I immerse myself with the homelessness, there's a whole nother language there, how they live their life and what they do, as there is with the refugees. And we were invited into a home where we spent the day eating with a family. And there was a huge language barrier. But we really understood one another through eye contact, through body language, through smiles. So although there is that language barrier, there's other ways to get around it. I think the biggest barrier that I noticed within the community was the neighborhoods that the refugees are predominantly, that I'm aware of, being put into. Might be considered ghetto neighborhoods, neighborhoods high in poverty. And I think a lot of these neighborhoods, the people that live in the neighborhoods, as much as, I mean, refugees don't understand us, we don't understand them, and then there becomes a lot of angst and ideas of why are the refugees here and what they're getting, as opposed to, well, we're here first. And I guess I'm kind of leading up to maybe some of the violence that's happened within the community. That's a really big barrier, is understanding when they come here. They're kind of brought here, plucked into these neighborhoods, and then we just all see them and they just appear.
Sure.
But if we had some sort of understanding of who they are, why they're here. Recently someone mentioned and calls them the new Americans. And I think I've decided, and a lot of us have, not to use the word refugee and immigrants, and wish we had started out this project with new Americans, mm-hmm. because that's really what it is. And so, yeah, I think that to me was is the biggest barrier, is a lack of understanding.
Well, before we even get to the question of violence, which is which is certainly a problem, Brigitte, what is the goal for the 5,000 to 7,000 Bhutanese refugees or new Americans here? What is the goal, just as simple as we can imagine, to build a stable life, to provide for family?
What do you mean by what is the goal?
I mean, is the goal to live here in Rochester long term, to provide for family, to rebuild and go elsewhere? Give me a sense for what the goal for you and for many in the Bhutanese community is.
Well, I would say people like 40 years and above would want to go back.
Want to go back?
Yes. And that's what my dad wants to do. He wants to go back, which might not be possible, or I don't know. But the rest of the youths who are doing well, like, there are success stories behind our community. Like, a lot of students are doing very good in college, engineering, going towards medical field, teaching, and there are a few who have been to U.S. Marine from Rochester, from our community. So, and people are buying houses and helping, building Rochester economy. So, but let's say, like, the youths who can really adapt to American culture would want to stay here forever, maybe. But most of the elders, I don't think they are totally happy.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you've got this split, as Brigitte says, maybe the over 40 group that understandably says, I grew up somewhere. I want to go back if I get the chance.
Right.
And I'll build as stable a home as I can in Rochester and Monroe County. And their children are growing up thinking, this is the home and the life that I know.
Yes.
And let's build a life here.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very interesting. But Arlene touched on violence, and we've seen it reported in some places here in our area. What's going on, Brigitte?
Well, we've been the victim of opportunity. Our people have been jumped out. Houses have been robbed. So there are fights where our people are hit, and there are cases, a lot of cases go without any report. They don't make police report because they don't speak English. But yes, this is one of the most issues that I want to focus, because a lot of people are being attacked in our community, and I've been working with the Rochester Police Department, and it's getting better, I would say. Positively, it's getting better. But as soon as the summer or the high school stops in June, July maybe, and the violence begins. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say that the high school students are doing that, but that is the time when our people are highly vulnerable, and people get attacked, and mostly for the sense of money, maybe.
Is there also, are there attacks going on because of suspicion, resentment, lack of understanding of cultural identity? Are those, does that happen, Brigitte?
Well, our people don't really know how to... How can I say that? Our people don't have the idea of using bank cards and stuff. Like, they use a lot of cash, and that makes us vulnerable. And by one or two attacks, the attacking group can really think of that they can take advantage of. Like they say, okay, this is the community that we can go and attack. They don't make police reports, or they don't really fight back. So those things could be the adding factors.
That's heartbreakingly sad to hear that. And Arlene, you know, when you see that, when you hear that, I don't know, there's a part of me that wants to think that our homeless community and the impoverished community that is working to strive forward should have a little bit more of a linked arms mentality as opposed to sort of fighting and looking for people who are vulnerable and taking from that. It's terribly sad.
Yeah, what I see, and recently I was at a cultural fair, and an African-American man stood up in front of the group of refugees and talked about what's going on with the violence in the community. And what he mentioned was it really goes to a lack of understanding, and you're seeing these refugees come in and maybe thinking or seeing, well, they're getting homes, they're getting help, they're getting donations. And in these impoverished communities, what are we getting?
So there's some resentment.
It's really based on resentment. My opinion is it is based all on resentment. And I can say that partly, too, because when I lived in the Maplewood area, I lived in Fulton and Ravine, which is not one of the nicest corners in Rochester. But I knew all the boys, the young African-American boys and a lot of the young black men who are being accused of this. And I know them. I know them as well as I know my own sons. And I think it's resentment. And I think if there was a way, you know, to bring them in as part of this is their neighborhood, too, and to understand the refugees. And, you know, it would cost a lot of money and be a lot more, you know, work. But it would be worth the effort to lower the violence and just that understanding.
Brigitte, when new Bhutanese refugees come here, first of all, do we know how many a year? That population is increasing. How often or what that number is on an annual basis?
Well, there is no exact number of people, but it depends. Sometimes it could be more than 1,000. Sometimes it can end up in hundreds.
Okay, but yeah. Maybe hundreds a year, okay?
Yes.
So what's the placement like? Where do they end up, and how? What is that process like for finding places to live for them when they come to Rochester?
Well, there is a Catholic Family Center that works to settle us. So basically it's very easy. They work very nicely. The houses are ready. Your apartment is ready. They will work for your DSS. And once you are on your own, so you have to start on your own, like for I think 4 to 6 months, you are taken care of by the Catholic Family Center.
It sounds to me, though, like you are optimistic that it is slowly getting better, that police are responding more, that the community is maybe working through these problems a little bit better?
Yes. The churches are working on this, like Michael Ford from Lake Havana Baptist Church. He has been working on this. And there are a few individuals who come up voluntarily forward and help. So now things are like it's coming towards the screen of the Rochesterian, and people are coming forward to help, which is a good sign.
We've spent this half hour to open this program with a look at a snapshot, if you can pardon the pun, of what's going on in the refugee community. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take a 60-second break. We're going to come back and talk about the community darkroom galleries, how you can see them and the way that Arlene's work and the work of people like Michelle and Lucas are bringing to life and bringing awareness to these issues, certainly for me. I mean, I'll say this, Arlene, you already have in this half hour. I've learned more about our local refugee population than maybe I ever have, and that's really, really remarkable. So let's take a break and come back and talk to you, tell you about how you can see their work next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, yes, by now you know you've got to keep your brain active the older you get, just to stay sharp. Well, there's a group that started in Rochester. It's become a worldwide organization that seeks not just to keep music in the lives of the aging population, but the performance of music. How about picking up an instrument in your 80s? There's a new documentary tonight about all of that, and we preview it next hour.
There's a phrase often touted by the American Red Cross.
91 cents of every dollar that's donated goes to our services. That's world class, obviously.
It's a statistic any charity would be envious of. There's only one problem. It's not true. An investigation by NPR and ProPublica today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on your public radio station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and our panel in studio this hour is talking about Rochester's refugees. Arlene Hodge Thaler is a photojournalist who has spent a lot of time among the homeless population and now working and meeting with refugees. And I'm going to tell you about her work coming up in just a moment. Michelle Ashley and Lucas Marshall is a student. They're students, and they have been working on this as well, and Brigitte Rana-Magar is the chief executive officer of the Bhutanese community of Greater Rochester. Did you know that 5,000 to 7,000 Bhutanese refugees are here, living with us, living among us, building communities? And in so many ways, I'm hopeful that we're going to feel more integrated. I'm a little let down when I hear about some of the violence against them, but Brigitte telling us that that's slowly improving. So let's talk to Arlene and Michelle and Lucas about what launches on Saturday. Arlene, let's just start with this. What's going on Saturday?
Saturday, from 3 to 6 at Genesee Center for the Arts, which houses the community darkroom upstairs.
And where is that?
That is located on Monroe Avenue. The exact address.
It's okay. We can find it online. But the bottom line is it's on Monroe Avenue.
Monroe Avenue. And we're going to be having our Rochester Refugees exhibit, where we've spent the last almost 3 months, six of us photographers, immersing ourselves in the lives of refugees in Rochester, being in their homes, eating with them, going to resettlement centers. And we've got an exhibit of all of our work that will be up that day. We'll also have Somali refugees doing henna. We'll have Bhutanese and Burmese food and some dresses that will be sold, which helps to support dresses for girls. A lot of the local refugees make these to send to globally. So little girls, the idea is if they have a new dress, they won't be raped or abducted. And when you think about that, and that's a whole nother heart-wrenching aspect of being a refugee and living in the camps and that.
Well, Arlene, with this time of year, so many of us, and look, I'm among them. We get so caught up in just trying to get through our day and, you know, picking up the kids, getting dinner made, all those things. And then you think about maybe Christmas is coming up for you or Hanukkah or whatever you might celebrate. And you think about, well, what do I need to check off the list? Then you think about this situation, and it puts it a little bit perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Sure. You know, we're constantly looking for ways. For me, it was always the homeless. What can we bring? Clothes and food and blankets and hats. We've got the tent city. But with the refugees, the immigrants or the new Americans, it's the same thing. Clothing, you know, food, furniture. A lot of groups around Rochester accept donations to help them as well.
You talked about the immersion. Let me talk to Michelle and Lucas as well about some of the work. So, Michelle, I know you've been fighting through that cough. You sound great, by the
I'm
way.
I'm good.
Come a little closer to the mic. So there you go. And let me just tell me a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing as well.
Well, for me, the biggest thing was the kids. I love the children that I've been working with and have really connected with a lot of kids. And I feel it's so important to teach our generation and the next generation about diversity, and maybe that being different shouldn't be a threat. And I think that's where some of the anger comes from, with maybe what Brigitte was talking about with the violence. And so I really connected with the kids, and I feel my pictures show that, and how trusting they are and how vulnerable they are.
Kids how young?
My gosh, some of them were 3 years old to 12 years old were the ones that I photographed. And they're so vulnerable, and they're so accepting, and they're so warm, and they're so loving. They don't really know what the older kids are seeing maybe so much, and the adults are seeing. So that was my biggest connection, and my biggest, it was so powerful to me to be able to help them and see what they see and maybe by the time they're older, it'll be a little bit different for them.
We've talked on this program recently, and I've said it myself that, you know, I have a toddler, and when you see the 3-year-olds that you've seen all the way up to 12, kids are not born with this suspicion and resentment.
Absolutely
of others.
Not. Right.
You know, that comes from something that happens to them. And I'm sure you saw that up close. I mean, those kids are kids who have the same kind of...
Absolutely.
Toddlers are toddlers. I mean, it's really amazing.
So trusting and so welcoming. And some of the older kids were a little apprehensive at first.
Sure.
And I actually photographed some teenagers that it took a little while to gain maybe not so much the trust, but I didn't want them to feel that they were... I don't know how to put it, like so different that we were there to photograph them like as they were maybe a sideshow act or something. We were there
How do you explain to a 15-year-old, we're not here to exploit you?
And that's exactly what I said.
That's a hard
concept at 15. I want people to be enlightened. I want to make a difference in the next generation so that we don't have these issues and so that people aren't threatened by someone because they're different. And you know, once I started to talk to the teenage boys like that, they were friending me on Facebook and sending me messages and can you send me my pictures and can you meet me? I wanna do more pictures. And you know, we talked about some of the violence that is happening in the city, and as soon as I brought up things that really they connected to, they came right down and, you know, they were interested. So big difference between the little kids that I photographed and the teenagers, for sure.
How interesting. And when the subject of violence comes up, or just the notion of living in a place that might be new or with new challenges, are the younger kids, are they sort of immune to that? Or are they scared? You know, what kind of sentimentality did you find in them?
I feel that maybe because children of all races and cultures are probably a little more, maybe educated's not the word, but they're not paying attention. They don't care. They don't care like the adults do and some of the older teenagers do. They're not threatened by diversity. So I don't think that for them it's an actual issue. The kids that we photographed at Jones Park were all playing together, and nobody really seemed to care who belonged to who or what color you were or what you were doing. And so for them, I think it's just that generation is going to be so much better than ours and the ones before us.
You know, I hope so.
I hope so. I hope that's what we're doing, is maybe enlightening some people to, I don't know why people are threatened or why in this day and age people are still being separated by your differences. And they are. Rochester, there's so many different cultures, and I was never really into stepping into the city like this before, but I'm seeing that there's still segregation. There's still people being separated, and we're all just people.
Yeah.
We're all just people.
From people far smarter than me have said, in many ways, our city is more segregated than it was a generation ago. When we talk about immersion work, I mean, how long did you spend doing this kind of work?
With the refugee community, it was a semester, so I think we started in September.
Yeah.
September, maybe? Yeah. But we were out there always at least once a week and sometimes more. There was always, Arlene would give us, you know, hey, there's this going on. If you want to join, if you can do this, you can do that. So sometimes we'd go off on our own. Sometimes it was a couple times a week that we would go out.
Well, I have avoided to some degree on this program, Arlene, describing too much of the photography I've already seen, only because this is not a visual medium, so and people will be able to see the photography. But it is moving, very moving stuff. And when I think about choices photographers could make when it comes to the way you compose a shot, the way you choose to kind of tell a story, you could show up at an event or in a community or on a street and try to get what you think you need quickly and move on. Or you can actually spend time and get to know people and learn about them and break bread with them. What's the difference for you, Arlene, between sort of the quick work that could happen and the immersion work that you favor?
I don't know how to do the quick work anymore. Like I said, when I first started doing it, it was all quick, and it was really that I keep thinking of the word gratuitous, but so many photos were just gratuitous. No names, no stories. immersion in immersing myself in their world. And like Michelle was saying too, you get to know them, you know, they're Facebooking you, they're friending you. It's no longer just, I'm here to do the project and I'm out. You're now part of their lives. You're making a difference, as you were saying earlier, in their lives. It'll be there forever. And I have a good friend in Prajit now. I feel like this has been a bit of a journey these last couple of weeks, you know, since the concert and that. And that's where the barriers break.
I got to add, in a moment, I got to ask you about that concert because I love that story. But I want to ask Lucas. So Lucas Marshall is also a student. And, you know, tell me about some of the work that you've been doing, Lucas.
Well, for me, I would say it's a bit different because it's not only to see how the refugee live here, but it's also in the context of America because I'm not from here. Mm-hmm. So already seeing the United States is a big difference for me, but I took this class in order to get closer to people. I didn't know it was about refugee at the beginning, and I wanted to, the title was social reportage. I wanted to meet people. As a foreigner, I don't get to go in the neighborhoods we went to, and I wanted to meet people I wouldn't get to meet if I would leave my normal foreigner life in here. So it was really great in that regard because I got to meet loads of interesting people and a complete new experience for me. For photography, I did a little about soccer because Bill Weschmeyer has a soccer team going on, pretty good one, with different teams with different ages. And I went to a few soccer match day one and see how they train, and they're really hopeful to get a lot of people motivated enough to have a good team going on. And it's a big thing when they win. It's really gets them more motivated to win against an American team, let's say. And soccer is a kind of new thing here as well. It's not as big as in Europe, but it's big to them. They love soccer compared to baseball or American football. So that's where they all regroup and try to push a group forward, and being together playing football. Obviously, they're not doing bad things somewhere else. I guess that's the big point about a sport.
How interesting. So you come from France. You get to observe not only the United States, but also the refugee community as it exists in the United States. What surprised you the most?
Well, a big experience for me was definitely the day they opened their home and we went to share a lunch with them. That was really something I had never experienced before. They welcomed us. We came across them a few times at Jones Park, but a few messages between Arlene and the family, and then we were sharing a lunch in their home. So that was really incredible to see that firsthand and to share intimate moments being in their own house.
What did you experience in that lunch setting? I mean, look, it's perhaps an hour or a few hours and a part of one day, but what did that teach you? What did that show you?
Well, they were interested in us as well, as because we were there because we are interested in them and wanted to convey their story and show an intimate vision of them to show other people. But there were, yeah, the kids were on my knees for 2 hours and they were watching Chinese movies and they let us if I was watching the TV, they would try to give me a chair so I could sit, or they let us eat before they did because that's the custom for them. And that was intimidating, but it's normal for them, so we did what's normal for them.
Lucas, at the end of, I say it's at the end, this experience doesn't end, but in the work that you've done and in the experiences that you've had, you've heard Brigitte talk about the challenges facing, for example, the Bhutanese community, but really refugee communities of all backgrounds, with language, with culture, with adaptation, with looking for jobs, with violence and vulnerability. Do you come out with more hope, or are you more cynical?
Oh no, I wouldn't say I'm the cynical type. So I'm hopeful for them, and if like Bridget said, more and more are coming to the US. Hopefully it can only get better and the communities can learn to interact with themselves better. There are, like you said, this Black American man said that there were problems because they were not respected in their time. So they should understand that the violence comes from back in time, and that everybody should really talk to each other. And in this respect, the day we went to this church, where it was a venue with every culture showing a glimpse of their culture of dancing and singing, and it was great to see how many different cultures there were, and it's great that they have an opportunity not to lose their culture but continue, even if they are in a different country, to express themselves, and hopefully they can keep their culture but be in harmony with their neighborhood and the country.
One of our listeners asked, and Brigitte, perhaps you can help answer this question, to ask, with the cost of airfare, how did the refugees get here? And is there a higher concentration in Rochester than other cities, for example, with the Bhutanese population?
Okay, in terms of concentration, I don't know exactly what does the statistics say, but Georgia, Atlanta should be the most crowded.
Atlanta, interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And in terms of state, Atlanta should come first, and I'm not 100% sure, but it's my assumption. Atlanta, and then Texas, and then New York. But now it's Ohio. Columbus, Ohio probably has the highest population because a lot of people are moving in there. And North Dakota.
North Dakota.
Yes.
So what makes, for example, Rochester? What would make Columbus, Ohio? What makes that community one that is growing in this population? Is this considered a welcoming community or a community with opportunity? What are the factors that...
The first thing is job.
Jobs.
Yes. Wherever you can get job very fast... easily, that's the place where they want to move in. And in terms of the other question that the listener asked,
how to move about. Yep.
Yes, I've been paying airfare.
You've been paying airfare.
Yes, because
out of your pocket.
Basically, yeah. What happens is they pay for our airfare, and then we have to come here. And after we get the work, after we get a job, so we pay back in portions and portions. So I'm almost done with the airfare. So that's how we pay back the airfare.
Wow. Did you know that, Arlene?
No, I did not.
Before I get back to the exhibit then, Brigitte, let me ask you, what does your community need? I mean, this is a time of year where people are thinking about others. And we've touched a little bit on, we've talked recently on this program about homeless populations, impoverished populations. What does a refugee community need?
Simply help. They need help. Help in aspect of getting job. Help in respect of making them feel that they are part of this community.
I think that sounds like,
yes.
That sounds like step one.
Yes.
Is not feeling like
with all these people coming in from different part of the world. I told this one in one of the events that Rochester, I don't think, is a black and white community anymore. So, yes, some kind of help, making them feel that they are part of the community, letting them access to different events or things like that. So, yeah, that would be...
When you arrived 4 years ago, did you feel part of this community? How long did it take you to feel that you were part of the community?
Well, it depends in individual perspective, because when you speak English and you are a little outgoing, it's not hard to get going with
sure.
the community.
Yes, and that's you.
Yeah.
But for those who may be introverted or may not speak English or both or might not come with a job or an understanding of the culture, very different.
Very different. It takes a long, long time. It takes a long time to adapt to the community.
So it sounds to me, Arlene, like part of the message from Brigitte is we all can help. Even outside of material or monetary, we can simply be more open to those who come from different backgrounds. And that sounds like so obvious. I mean, how often we hear that, but boy, what a reminder that it's so meaningful.
Yeah, it's so easy. I talk a lot about, with different groups, how can you help the homeless community? So I don't have money to give them. I don't have clothes or blankets, but I have a hand to shake an arm to hug and an ear to listen. And it's the simplest things that go so far. And I think what Prajit was talking about too, with not with the language barrier and being isolated in your homes instead of within a community, they have a high suicide rate. There's a very, that's a, another issue with, and I think it stems from isolation and the lack of the community and our understanding of them in the neighborhoods. So yeah, a touch, a smile.
Well, I am hardly qualified to talk about suicide, but what we hear is that hopelessness is unfortunately a factor in it. It's time to make sure people feel hope.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't feel that you can adapt and that you could find work and that you can learn what you, the skills you need, that's a frightening prospect, but I think we all can do something there. All right, so if you're just joining us, the Community Darkroom Galleries has this exhibit, Rochester's Refugees, the Genesee Center for the Arts and Education hosting that. It's 713 Monroe Avenue, if I have it right, 713 Monroe Avenue, and there is a free reception on Saturday for the opening of Rochester's Refugees. That is 3 to 5 p.m.
3 to 6 p.m.
3 to 6.
Yep.
That's why you're here, Arlene.
Yep.
And I'm 3 to 6 on Saturday. But if you can't go on Saturday, you can see the exhibit until January, right?
Yes, January 9th, I believe.
January 9th. So the Community Darkroom Galleries are located there. Arlene, if people haven't been there, you just kind of give me the lay of the land.
Yeah, it is on Monroe Ave across from Blessed Sacrament Church, and it's housed in the Genesee Center for the Arts there on Monroe. There's a lot of other things going on, too, that day, earlier in the day. They're having a fair and the pottery, bookmaking, all sorts of events during that day. So you could come even a little bit earlier before our show to enjoy all the galleries located within the Genesee Center for the Arts.
And I also want you to tell the story of the concert. I want you to...
You
shared it with me.
Yeah, the concert was great.
Go ahead.
Well, we've been introduced to the Bhutanese, the refugee or the new American community by several people. And I want to thank Mike Conniff of the Refugee Resettlement Services in Rochester. He takes care of Mary's Place on Lexington. And we've got Bill Wishmeyer, who is very active with the sports, as Lucas was saying. And then we've also got Dr. Louise Bennett from the Somali Outreach Center. So the three of them have really been an integral part of this. Bill Wishmeyer said, Arlene, there's a Bhutanese concert going on at the Stardust Ballroom, you know, let your class know. So some of us showed up to it, and you were the MC for it, Prajit, right? There were singers and dancers, musicians, and there had to be several hundred Bhutanese that were at the ballroom. We got front row seats there, and seeing the teenagers dancing and laughing and playing and the music and the festivities going on, I thought, this is a secret gem.
You mean there's a world outside
there
Katy
is
Perry
a world outside of Katy
teenagers.
Perry, yeah. And the music was fantastic. The dancing, the you know, for young girls today to see these young girls dancing with the clothes that they wear and the colors. And some of the photos I took were just the girls, you would have thought you were at a Beatles concert. They were so excited. Their sense of community with music and dancing is so powerful. It was an experience. I'll never forget.
And a reminder to us that there does exist this kind of world within our world that it's wonderful, but it shouldn't exist entirely separately, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's welcome. And it was great to be very welcome.
I got 2 minutes left. Brigitte, have you seen some of the photography that Arlene and Lucas and the entire group, that I know there's half a dozen who've been working. Have you seen some of the work?
Yes, I have, and they're amazing. They are amazing.
Because we talked about it, and Michelle talked about the desire to make sure that the refugee community didn't feel exploited. And it sounds to me like you feel honored by this.
Yes. Yes.
You appreciate the work.
Yes. This is a way of putting our voice. So they've been being a medium of bringing our voice to the community, which is very great. I honestly welcome that on behalf of Bhutanese community.
And Arlene, if people want to kind of get a little preview and a taste, your website is what?
My website is Arlene O Photography, and I'm at WordPress. But if you just Google Arlene Hodge.
Arlene is A-R-L-E-E-N, Arlene Hodge. You'll find it.
You'll find it, the first site that pops up, and there's a lot of the photos of the refugees that I've been putting up on there, and a lot of familiar faces in Rochester with
again,
the homeless.
Again, not a visual medium, but just describe one of the photos that is embedded now in your heart. You got less than a minute, but just choose one.
Oh, when Lucas, Michelle, and I went to the home of the refugees and ate with them, the little girl that was there, and standing there with her mother, her grandmother, her aunt, and everybody, there's a really great photo that I feel like I captured of the women of their family and the food and home life.
You're nodding over there, Lucas.
Yeah,
I
agree completely with that. Arlene says there was a great sense of community. There was a two generations at least in this house. There were 11 mm-hmm. living in
11.
One house, and mm-hmm. it was great to see that.
Well, congratulations on this, and Brigitte, I have to say, I've learned so much about what's happening in my own community from you in just this 1 hour. And I only hope for your community that you do feel welcome, and that the 5,000 to 7,000 Bhutanese refugees and the refugees from the other different diverse backgrounds from around the world do feel that they're in Rochester, because the people here are not going to put up walls. You know, life isn't exactly like it is in Nepal or other places, but welcome, and thank you for taking the time.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you. And Lucas, Michelle, Arlene, congrats. You can go out and see their work at the Community Darkroom Gallery starting this Saturday and all the way through January 9th. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, short break, and more with you next on Member Supported Public Radio.